Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Random Fandom with me, Bob Fleming, from the Proctor Who podcast.
And me, Jim Cameron, from the Crinoid podcast.
And for those that don't know, what we do is, doesn't even make sense. You send us questions about what you'd like us to sort of put our thoughts and musings to at random. We randomly pick them out of a machine, and we just natter about them, and sometimes it's relatively interesting, and occasionally it's amusing, and that's basically the jam, and that's how it works. So yeah, anything else you'd like to add to that introduction, Jim?
No, it's a simple concept, well described, Bob.
You say well, Jim. Cool. So are we straight into it?
Yeah. Shall I pick the first one then?
Yeah. Do you want to spin the disc wheel of machineness?
Yes, the digital tombola, randominator.
Oh, randominator, that's it, we remembered. I can't believe you remembered, that's amazing.
Something like that. Yes, here we go. Okay, this is from a fellow podcast. This is from New to Who, a fairly newish Australian podcast. Well worth a listen. Check them out. Good stuff. Anyway, they say fans will often point to ratings as a correlative of quality over the course of Doctor Who's television run. But is this always true? So, big ratings, big quality, Bob, what do you think?
This is tricky because you've got to put into some sort of context. Ratings, you know, are poor compared to what they used to be like, if you see what I mean. But that's pretty generic overall TV shows and channels, isn't it? So... I think it's difficult to say. I think something like the Christmas special, although in my opinion never really quality, they do tend to get more viewers. But a generic sort of run of Doctor Who, particularly last season before, it's been diminishing to the sort of three, four, five millions, isn't it? So, which is, yeah, it does work out of its time. So in its standing currently, Doctor Who is, it's roughly where it's been for a while, you know, against other TV shows. Like, I mean, if you talk about quality and quantity of people viewing, you got the X Factor and Britain's Got Talent and all that horrendous nonsense that millions and millions of idiots watch. So, you know, like, they should not allowed to be judged. The human public should not be allowed to judge or watch anything, really. But take that out of the equation. I think it is difficult to sort of, I don't know, answer that question, really.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in terms of the history of Doctor Who, if it makes any sense, it is to compare within Classic Who, because, you know, obviously there's far more choice by the time it came back. You know, the distribution of viewers is far wider over far more, not just TV, but other things that you could be doing. Whereas back in the 60s and 70s, say, you know, you had, well, to start with, two channels to choose from, then three, then I guess latterly four.
I think if you look at it, what people are going to be suddenly sort of saying is they're going to be reverting to the Davison and Colin Baker era, get up against the Tom Baker and John Pertwee era and things like that, because you can't do that. Because for me, the quality, you know, the sort of final three seasons of Tom Baker, well, the take out when JNT took over, you got the first three seasons, which were awesome, Tom Baker, and the second three, which are not so great. The quality in there was massively lower. But it was still sort of commanding good viewing figures in context or in comparison to some of the Davison stuff, which was awesome. But the Davison was up against stuff like Coronation Street midweek and stuff like that, wasn't he? So they were doing, like, just the way it was showing. It was always like Saturday night TV. And then in the as the 80s came in, it was shown at different times. So it was messing around with schedules. I don't know.
Well, Davison had very high ratings, didn't he, when he first started?
When he first started, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think, you know, the best one in the world, you could say that the first season or two of Davison is top draw Doctor Who, could you?
No.
So I think the basic answer is no. I don't think you can judge them in that way. And for instance, you know, I can't remember the kind of comparison of Colin Baker to Sylvester McCoy, but obviously the latter two seasons of Sylvester McCoy,
best Doctor Who we've ever seen. Just saying.
Well, I mean, you'd find it hard, I think, to find many people who would say that they were worse than the Colin Baker.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And most people would say they were better. And I think the ratings are roughly the same. And that's against Curry back, yeah, you know, at that stage. So, yeah, I think the basic answer is there's too many variables. I think another thing, if you delve down to within the stories as well, to me it always seems that, perhaps with the exception of the first episode of every story, the ratings will be dependent on how good the episode before was, I think.
Yeah. So, no, no. And when you do Crinoid and we do Proctor Who, we'd look at sort of the average and the average viewership or, you know, viewing figures and what each episode commanded.
Yeah.
I can't remember many dramatic differences, but there always does appear to be some sort of dip-off, I think.
Well, they talk about first nights, don't they? When people know it's the first episode of a story, you get more bums on seats. That's why one of the kind of strategies of Moffat is to have as many first nights as you can. So split your... Well, it's one of the excuses. I don't know if it was a strategy. To, you know, split your season into two, then you get an extra first night, don't you? And I think with any kind of serial format, you get more viewers for the first than anything else because A, people are curious, and B, if they don't like it, they won't tune in again. And if they miss episode one, they're not likely to tune in. You know, it's a bit different now, I suppose, with catch-up and stuff, which is another difference, yeah.
Back then we're different. Yeah, you got catch-up as well now. So, no, I think the answer is no, to be honest with you. I think it's, you can't do that, really, because of all of the variants and reasons I think we've talked about.
Yeah, I think you have to judge things on their own merits. And I think things like audience reaction and stuff...
Well, you got the,
it's interesting.
The appreciation AI, the appreciation index, isn't it, something it's called now?
That's right.
Where they ask a certain amount of people. I mean, that's a new thing, isn't it? Since Doctor Who's been back, I think.
Oh no, they had it in the old days, but it was it's about 30 points lower than it is now. So I think the kind of, you know, the average then was significantly over the average now. I think I'm not sure they were done on the same basis. But when we're talking about the dwindling figures now because of viewership of everything kind of dissipating into different areas, I think it's like market share or viewership share of, you know, where you are in the, how many shows got more viewers than yours is more of a guide than the actual numbers of people viewing because of the way that viewing habits have changed so much.
Right. I just think overall, it's you can't. There's too many variants to it, basically, to suggest that. You know, bang on with the McCoy thing, but up against Cora does not stand a chance. So no, you can't. Yeah. I'm afraid, new to who?
Oh, well, I don't think they're suggesting you can. They're just saying the fans will often point to that.
Oh, right. So
and I think fans aren't. Yeah, they're wrong to do that.
Yeah, a lot of fans are wrong all the time, really.
Indeed they are. So thanks, New To Who.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And as I say, give them a listen. They're excellent podcast. Bob, are you going to spin the wheel of destiny?
Spinning away there, Jim boy. Right, this one is from John Lane. Is Colin Baker's portrayal of the Doctor badly underrated? Now, it depends what you're talking about. You're talking about Big Finish or TV? Because Big Finish, it's rated very highly.
Mm-hmm.
And this TV persona of the Doctor isn't. And that's right for me. That's right for my money. I thought he's definitely my least favourite portrayal of the Doctor on telly. And I'm not knocking Colin Baker as a guy. I think he's ace. He loves Doctor Who. And he absolutely kicks it out of the park on Big Finish, but not on telly. But that's not down to him. I think he's a good actor. I think he was just badly, not necessarily written for, but it was just a horrible, garish, badly maintained time for Doctor Who, but not necessarily his fault. So I think there's two elements to this. TV for me, no, not a very good portrayal of the Doctor. Big Finish, yes, brilliant.
Okay, I'm not going to be quite so charitable as that, I'm afraid. I think he is good in Big Finish. I don't listen to much of it, but what I've heard him do, I think he's good. And I think some of the problems that we had during his TV era have been ironed out by then, not least of which you don't have to look at what he's wearing. But what I would say about his TV era is that, yes, there are tons of things outside of his control that certainly don't help. But I would say I don't think he's the right sort of actor for this show. I think he's too stagey. I think everything he does is over-exaggerated. Almost everything, actually. Occasionally, I'll put on a Colin Baker, and I think he is obviously acting every single moment of the show, which some people might like. I don't like that. I like to see naturalistic acting. So for me, that's a big turn off. So for me, I don't think he's underrated. I think he's rated pretty much where he should be. The only Doctor Who actor that has irritated me more is Tom Baker when he's been buggering about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they, I mean, I do not like... It's harsh to say I don't like Colin Baker's Doctor. Because as a child, I was very forgiving of Doctor Who in all forms, effects, storylines, whatever. I loved it all. I never I was cynical or never judged it. I just embraced it all. I loved it as a younger man and child, I'd say. And I'd probably say it since I started podcasting and talking about Doctor Who, I've got more... it's not cynical, is maybe the wrong word, but obviously reviewing it, you're looking more in depth to it.
Yeah.
But that's only been... I mean, I've only been doing Doctor Who podcasts now for 3 years. So since Capaldi season took over. And before that, I was never... I just loved everything, I think. Because I wasn't picking it apart in my own, you know, for review purposes. You know, when it came back on telly as well, Chris Eccleston here, I just loved it all, loved all Tennant, loved all of it. And it wasn't like, since I started doing these podcasts and reviewing stuff, that I started being more, you know, picky, negative about it. And that includes going back to watch certain adventures that I hadn't watched for a while as well on the classic show, Colin Baker. For example, Revelation of the Daleks. Adored that. I remember when we picked it out, we were like, we're doing Revelation of the Daleks. I was like, that's amazing. This is one of my favourite Doctor Who's ever. And I watched it, I was like, fresh eyes. Not, this is awful.
Didn't you vote it the best story ever?
We were possibly drunk. We do that quite a lot in Doctor Who. But yeah, we voted the best story ever for a while. And it's a good story. It really is a good story. But when you look at the acting in it, not just from Colin Baker, but I think from a lot of people, it's very... But I think it's very of the time. You know, there was a lot... It was 80s garish. Obviously, everyone was on cocaine. And whatever it was, there were... You know, but he is a good actor. He's a very good actor, is Colin Baker. And although it's voice acting in Big Finish, it is a lot more subtle, without a doubt. And I genuinely don't think it was him. I think it was the costume, the way I think he was sort of not told to play it, but advised to play it particularly. I think if you'd had a completely different person at the helm, maybe, I don't know, just guiding him a bit better or giving him more... Or let him. I mean, I don't know what he wanted to do as a doctor. I know he wanted to make it different, a bit more, you know, bullish or whatever, which is kind of fine. Look at, you know, Tom Baker was the same. John Pertwee, I mean, wow. You don't get more sort of up your own ass than that. But, I love John Pertwee, but I don't know. Like, I am a bit more forgiving of Colin Baker, I think. Although I do not like his era really that much. But I do like some of the story ideas, like Vengeance on Varos. Like, we did Attack of the Cybermen recently on Proctor Who, and I thought I was going to hate it. And that's what I remember not particularly being keen on as when I was younger and not seeing it for a while. I watched it twice. Like, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good idea, a really good story. But again, I couldn't... I think if you had a different costume, toned it down a bit, I think it'd be really good.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly part of the problem.
The costume's horrendous. Like, the costume, I think, has always been horrendous, actually, thinking about it.
Well, I wonder if it affects the performance. I mean, it certainly affects the viewing experience. I mean, I always think of what it would be like if you were just a random punter just flicking through the channels and alighting on BBC One when Colin Baker's wearing that and thinking, oh, what's this stupid programme? If you didn't know what it was, you just think, oh, this looks absolutely awful. Even in the 80s, you would think that, I think.
Even if you're on cocaine, you just think, he looks like a clown, doesn't he? He looks like a garish clown.
Yeah, particularly when you get to the Trial of a Time Lord. When he's
and he got
that...
fat as well. That was, I mean, I'm not knocking fat people, but, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was a little bit overweight and his hair got just enormous, didn't it? It was like kind of Harpo Marx massive thing. It added to the sort of clown portrayal.
There was parts in that, though, with his acting in particular, he'd sort of toned down a bit. A little bit.
Yeah, he had, yeah.
And there was parts when he wasn't just bawling his head off in the trial room, you know, in the courtroom, that he played some really good sort of sensitive bits and pieces. I thought he was probably acting it better in Trial of the Time Lord, even though it was absolutely shit, all of it, apart from Brian Blessed, who I think was just the greatest actor of all time ever.
Brian Blessed!
Brian Blessed! I mean, if you talk about overhamming it, there's no one that does it better than Brian Blessed. But it is terrible. I mean, but when I was a kid, I remember getting the tin, the box set, the videos. I loved that. And at the end, when the Valiard was revealed, the Doctor and the Master was in it, it was just the best thing ever. And I'm talking, when I say kid, I'm talking like about 14, 15, I got that box set. And I adored it. So, you know, I think when we become older and bitter and do podcasts, we think of things differently. So if you talk to 14, 15-year-old Bob Younger, Colin Baker was ace. And yes, he was underrated. Talking to Bob at 38 now, after 3 years of a podcast under his belt, no, he was shit.
Well, basically, podcasting is ruining Doctor Who for us.
It probably is. It ruined last season for me, I tell you. Honestly.
Well, I quite liked Colin Baker at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd kind of lost interest in the programme a little bit by the time we got to Trial of a Time Lord, but I didn't mind him at the time. It's only later on that I could see what I now would consider to be deficiencies in what he was doing. But going back to the question, I'd say no, he wasn't badly underrated. He was rated about right for TV. He seems pretty good on Big Finish, and that's pretty much what you're saying as well.
He works really well with Evelyn, the Evelyn Smart, the old lady. I think them two are brilliant together on Big Finish.
Yeah, very true. So thanks, John, for that. I hope that's kind of answered your question. maybe not. Okay, shall I kick Votan up the backside and get to spit out the next one?
Give Votan a good wallop.
I will. Okay, here we go. Right, this is from Jeff Waddle again.
Hi, Jeff.
He was in our last episode, wasn't he? Thanks, Jeff. Given the rumours of Bradley Walsh, wrongly in brackets, being the new companion, which game show people would make good companions? Well, what do you make of that, Bob? Game show people.
I'd like to see, what's he called? That one that bummed a bloke and killed him in his swimming pool. Michael Barrymore. That one. He was really good before he did that. Remember I'm telling you? It was the best. Like, he couldn't touch him. He was better than Brucey on Bruce Forsyth, all of them. Like, he was hilarious. Like, Barrymore's people. He was a king. King of quiz shows, just presenting telly. And then he
What?
And all that, he was ace. And then he did that, and then he went mental.
Yeah, well, thanks.
So,
thanks for that sensitive portrayal of the life of Michael Barrymore.
Well, that's probably what happened, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I personally, you know, there's a thing that people are always going to bleat. Oh, I'm going to stop watching if this happens. I would stop watching if he was on Dog 2 every week. Yes, a piece of stunt casting in the shadows for of an episode, maybe.
I remember him doing some quite good acting. I'm sure he acted in some couple of things as well. He was quite good. Or is that just me? I can't remember. I'm sure he did.
I don't remember. He's not someone whose career I've diligently followed.
I used to love him, though. Me and my mum would watch him, like, anything he was on. Strike It Lucky, Barrymore's Kind of People, all of them. Brilliant, he was, until he did what he did. I'm just saying.
Barrymore's Murder Rap, that was a good one.
So is Bradley Walsh not being in Doctor Who, then? Because I was quite excited about that.
Is he not being in it?
Yeah.
That's just Jeff. I think that's Jeff saying wrongly. It's an opinion rather than fact. I think, Jeff, unless I've underestimated you. Yeah, on the subject of Bradley Walsh, I don't know much about him, but I've heard he's quite a good actor, and I'm pretty sure that Chibnall will do a good job with whoever he casts, because he's good at that sort of thing.
I thought it was a good shout, Bradley Walsh. Oh, I'll tell you what, Roy Walker.
see what you see.
No, you're good. It's good, but it's not correct, Doctor. I mean, that would be ace. Because they'd have, like, catchphrases already made, wouldn't they? I mean, Brucey can't do it anymore because he's dead, obviously, but... Like,
well, he would have been brilliant in that time.
Nice to see you, nice. And all that'd be class. Imagine a group of Daleks. Nice to see you, nice. I mean, it's so cool, man. Like, just catchphrases and it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, if the Doctor solved something, he'd say, did she do well?
Hiya! And all that'd be brilliant. I don't know, who else? Imagine, in fact, this is the best idea ever, is putting game show hosts as companions with Doctor Who.
What about, what's his name from Pointless? He's already been in it, hasn't he, Alexander Armstrong?
He might
make quite a good companion for...
He's a good actor, isn't he? He's quite all right, actor.
13th Doctor, he's in the Christmas special, isn't he? And he's acted in quite a few things. I quite enjoy him on screen. I think he's an interesting presence. He was also the computer, wasn't he, in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
David Mitchell?
David Mitchell, yeah. Is he a game show or is he a panel show?
Panel show. That's what's the difference, isn't there?
I'm running out. I don't really watch game shows, so I don't really know who's
Who's that big lanky boring git on? He's kind of quite funny. Is it Pointless or something? He does. He's like,
yes.
You know what I mean? He'd be quite.
Yeah, no, like I've forgotten
like
his name.
Like a freakish alien or something.
Osman, is it Richard Osman? Somebody
that's
Osman?
Him. That's him. Yeah. He can be a bit freaky in that. You know, you could sort of like meander around. He could be like an alien or something.
Yeah, you can't fit him in the TARDIS. It's a problem.
So, you're massive. You're not coming in. Richard, whatever you call.
You'd have to cling to the outside in your time-space continuum.
Yeah. I think there's endless possibilities to this scenario.
That's a good question.
Which could all have comedy effect and be funny if it was talked about by two people who were comedians.
Which, alas, we clearly are not. You can imagine, though, in the heyday of J&T, actually, it's a bit of straight. He didn't cast anyone from game shows and as companions. It'd be right up his street, wouldn't it?
Ken Dodd? Was he?
Light entertainment, but not game shows, not game as far as I know.
When, what is a game show, Jim? What is a game show? What constitutes a game show nowadays?
Nowadays, Anne Robinson's finished, hasn't she? Her droid was in. But I wouldn't want her within a gazillion miles of Doctor Who.
No, it'd be awful, wouldn't it?
Bob Holness.
Bob Holness.
He would have been a good doctor.
He'd have been a terrific doctor.
Yeah, he was James Bond on the radio, wasn't he?
Imagine him, Michael Barrymore, as his companion.
Yeah, that would be unusual.
Yeah, Bob Holness was ace, like, yeah, he was a good man. All right, I don't know. Anyone else?
As we've run out of game shows, I think we might have to leave that one there. Sorry, Jeff, I think we've crashed on the reef of ignorance of game show hosts there, but...
That was a good one, though, Jeff.
Good idea. Excellent idea. Cheers. All right, are you going to spin those things?
I'm going to slap Votan on the ass.
Yes.
Right, here we go. Forty-two to Doomsday, another great podcast, by the way.
Mm.
What are the three best and worst things JNT, John Nathan Turner, did as producer? Well, best one, can I go first?
You may.
Was appoint Andrew Cartmell as a script editor, because that made the greatest Doctor Who of all time. The greatest, definitely two seasons of Doctor Who in 25 and 26. So that's the best thing by far he did, in my opinion, which is usually correct, just saying.
Are you suffering a usual confidence crisis?
I suffer terribly with a lack of confidence. But no, I think that's...
Yeah. Lead singer's disease.
But I mean, you know, and it always will be for me personally, 25 and 26 are the best seasons of Doctor Who ever. And you can't take that away from me.
Well, I'm not going to try, but...
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim.
You want to go on with the next three? Next two? Start with best and then move on.
Yeah, so that's one for me. Do you want to do one?
Okay. Producing Doctor Who that wasn't season 17, reining in Tom Baker, kicking out the silliness, and sprucing everything up a bit.
I love that final season of Tom Baker. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. It's not perfect. I mean, Megalos is a bit average and Leisure Life to a lesser extent, but I think the rest of the run in there is terrific. I think he made a lot of correct decisions in that season, which he didn't always do.
Yeah.
And I think just sprucing everything up there and stopping Tom Baker from buggering about was just... For me, it saved the show.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. The three seasons before that for Tom Baker were... couple of bits were good, but most of it was pretty horrendous. And that was a big part due to having a soft producer and a script editor who is one of the most brilliant writers and funniest people ever, in my opinion, in Douglas Adams for part of that.
Yeah.
But he was just let run riot, wasn't it? And it was just ridiculous. And it was definitely a detriment to the show. When it came back, it was just it was a new show. I don't think it's ever been revamped that much. Apart from, you know, coming back on telly. Even then, do you know what? Even then, I think it's never been revamped like it was at that time.
It was quite startling.
Yeah.
I remember tuning into the first episode of Leisure Island and thinking, wow.
This, like the new graphics, you know, the way he was dressed, the way he was acting. The stories were serious. They were scientific. They were more factual and things like that.
That first one is beautifully directed as well. Unfortunately, he went over budget and took too long and stuff, so they never got him back. But that also added to the huge feeling of change there. So yeah, that would be one of my three best things that JNT did. How about your second one, Bob?
Well, the thing is, he gets a bit of a bad rap, but I think he did a lot of good stuff for Doctor Who. I genuinely think going down this the classic monster road, you've got Earthshock, Revelation of the Daleks, Resurrection of the Daleks, and Remembrance of the Daleks. So, like, he was quite keen on bringing back classic monsters and stuff like that. Sometimes it didn't work out, like Warriors of the Deep. But Warriors of the Deep is okay, apart from the big stupid monster, which I always blank from my mind.
The Murker.
Yes, the Murker.
Yeah, it's production problems in that predominantly, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think doing that, and I think bringing in celebrities and stuff like that, I think it's a great idea, because it gets viewers in. And a lot of it's quite nice to see him, if you see what I mean.
Mm.
Even like in the latter, like Survivor, you've got Hale and Pierce in there, for example. And that's kind of cool, because I was like, oh, it's Hale and Pierce, that's brilliant. And Ken Dodd. And, you know, we touched on before. And just bringing in this sort of, like, thing where it's going to get in the papers. And I really liked the way he sort of did that. Leaked out classic monsters coming back and the publicity that he did for the show. Because, again, I think, like what you're saying there, he saved the show with the revamp, but he saved the show by constantly keeping it publicised like no other producer done before. And I think he was the showrunner. You know, like, I think before producers and script editors, there were two different sort of things. I think particularly when he took over and until Cartmell came on board, where I think Cartmell got a lot more free rein narrative-wise and story-wise, he was a showrunner. You know, he had it in the, he had it everywhere, didn't he? So I think from that point of view, a bit like the publicity, bringing back classic monsters, getting, you know, the best out, putting things in which would get him in the papers. Yeah, I think that was an awesome thing that he did.
Yeah, I think that would be my second as well, is his ability to promote the show, because he's in his element doing that kind of stuff. You know, he had all the contacts. He knew how to schmooze the press and stuff. He knew the kind of names that would get the most impact. And, you know, he's quite a charming bloke. I don't know if he had to sort of smarm anybody into the programme or not, but
yeah,
he managed to do that. And that was just what his best at. He wasn't good at creative input, I don't think, which perhaps we'll go on to the next bit. But, yeah, I mean, he's a kind of a showman.
Mm.
And he likes the kind of razzmatazz and promotional side of the business. He was very good at that. I'm not sure he had to make as many personal appearances on TV as he did. He was certainly the most...
No, but again, you can say that about RTD. Say that about Moffat. They're always on bloody telly.
Back then, they weren't, though, really. I mean, I think there was one interview with Philip Hinchcliffe just doing the rounds, but I don't think producers got on TV very much then. But, you know, every time he turned on Swap Shop or Saturday Superstore, he was there. Whenever the actors turn up, he seemed to turn up, which I'm not sure is necessary, but he just liked being on the screen, didn't he?
And I think that's a great thing. I think that's definitely one of my, like I said, the publicity and him doing that kind of thing is one of my favourite things about it. And yes, it might have been in his own head, it makes me sort of a celebrity kind of thing. But he was a big personality. He was a cool, like, I think he's a great guy. Big fan of J&T. Mm. Big fan.
Okay, got another thing in the plus column.
Oh, we're going three each, are we?
I don't know. Yeah, perhaps you don't have to. I would add that casting Sylvester McCoy.
Yes.
At the time, I thought
brave.
I have to admit, I thought that was a mistake at the time. But in retrospect, it was the perfect choice, I think. I mean, he brought that vulnerability back. He brought a bit of mystery back. And he was once again, rather than sort of bombastic buffoon stomping about the place, he was someone a bit quieter, a bit more mysterious. And he got back to the kind of sort of ramshackle traveller sort of
Trouton, but a bit more, but Trouton Hartnell, I think there's a bit of that in there as well, that sort of dark quality that Hartnell had with the sort of buffoonery clown, I'm fumbled into this situation and then I've got you all by the balls and I also am Merlin, oh am I, and stuff like that, you know, like, and there's darker things at work here. He's the great, I mean, again, he's my favourite Doctor, so you might notice that I'm of a certain age whereby this is my favourite era of Doctor Who, the Sylvester McCoy era. But I agree with that, Jim. The worst decision, I think, is casting Colin Baker.
Yeah, let's move on to the worst. Yeah, that is certainly in my three worst things. Well, because of some of the reasons we already discussed earlier on. I mean, I don't think he's the right person for the role, just because of, you know, how he is in front of the cameras.
And his costume, I think, I don't like the question marks and stuff like that. I don't like the garishness of the costume. The costumes are, I quite like Tom Baker's costume, the way they did that. It's a really nice costume. I don't really like Peter Davis's costume. I think it's a bit silly.
Yeah.
I like McCoy's costume when he got the dark jacket. And I'm doing this for my own sort of personal gratification. I have the question mark tank top. It's probably my favourite item of clothing. And I've got the umbrella. However, I will admit, even though I love them, the way he looked in the film would have been miles better. So, like, the question marks and stuff like that, it was too much, all that, like. And it just looked a bit like a costume rather than actual clothes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the big problems. It's not just the Doctors, is it?
Everyone's got this costume, yeah.
People like Mel and stuff changed, didn't they? And Perry did. But, I mean, for a while, Perry was in, you know, it didn't matter what the colour was, but she'd been a sort of leotard and shorts, wouldn't she?
Yeah, but nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, in some ways. But, I mean, Teague and Adric and Nyssa were in the same stuff week in, week out, though, for quite a long while. And you know, it's a stupid thing, I suppose, but you did wonder how smelly they get after a while. You know, why haven't they got a change? You know, they spend all the time, you know, laundering their clothes, you know, rather than just changing. I know, just it's stupid. I don't know, it's for merchandise and stuff like that. I never took off. I never saw a Tegan doll or anything like that. Maybe there were, but I never saw one. So, yeah, the costuming side of things, yeah, it's best if you just leave that to the likes of June Hudson and, you know, give him a free rein. Mm. But it leads on to my second of the three worst things about him, and that's just the overall campness of the programme. Mm. I mean, it's very hard to take anything seriously when, you know, some of the stunt casting leads to some pretty camp performances.
Yeah.
With the likes of Lee John, for instance, in Enlightenment. You know, it's just, this is ridiculous stuff, really. But the overall feeling of sort of frivolousness. Frivolity.
Panto and theatre.
Panto
and theatre. Like, Max Strickson, for me, he's a great actor, but he's a theatre actor. A bit like Colin Baker, maybe. It's very, like, over the top. But you see that in a theatre, it's magnificent, because that's how you kind of act. It's two different skills of acting. I completely agree with what you're saying. There's some very dark stories which are camped up and not made as dark and gripping as they could be, shall we say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think the camped up panto brush, or whatever you want to tarnish it with, is valid and definitely something that was pretty shit throughout his era. Because it didn't start off like that either, did it?
No, not at all. No, this is something that kind of grew as in the role. But, I mean, the casting of people like Bonnie Langford, musical theatre star, and again, she's entirely inappropriate for the small screen, really.
She's very, very talented at what she does, the tap dancing and all that kind of stuff, but she's not an actress for Doctor Who.
No, there's times you say, step out of the TARDIS. She steps out of the TARDIS in Terror of the Fervor. Do you think she's about to burst into song the way she just wanders around? I mean, it looks like it is a scene from a pantomime.
Exactly. It's just pure casting. She's terrific at what she does, but not terrific in being an actress.
Well, I understand she's very good now on EastEnders, you know, in the small screen.
But she would have been told to act like Bonnie Langford.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean? Whereas now she's a lot older and all that kind of stuff, and she won't be doing what she was doing. Yeah. You know, it was just, bad decision, like. Which he did make quite a few of, but what I love about it was all very bold. Very bold indeed.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't seem to shrink back from many things apart from the hanky-panky and the TARDIS thing, but, you know, that's probably a good idea, isn't it? Just leave that outside the TARDIS. So he's fairly fearless, I guess, you know, considering he's got, you know, the sixth floor or whatever, the BBC, you know, staring down at him, whatever he does. That's why, you know, when the rest of the BBC lost interest in the Cartmel era, they had a bit more of a free rein to do what they liked. They got away with quite a lot more, didn't they, which is to the show's benefit.
Well, he didn't give a shit. He didn't want to be doing it. But it gave Andrew Cartmel a free rein, pretty much, which was the best thing that could happen to the show. So you had this guy that took over, seriously wanted to prove his point with one of the biggest actors on British television at the time, particularly Tom Baker, revamped the show, made it serious, got it going, and then he just became a victim of his own success. Maybe not that, but just maybe all went to his head. And he thought, right, we'll keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. Then obviously he got his hiatus, and then he thought, you know what, I don't want to be doing this, but I'm going to, you know, take risks such as appointing someone at 28 years old who's done barely any writing particularly, and making him scripted it with Doctor Who. And it paid off. It paid off massively. Mm. You know, and I love the way that we all look back on it now, because at the time for me it was my Doctor Who, but I think older people, I'm not doing it for comedy effect like I would do normally, like yourself and Mark and Craig on the podcast, they didn't like Sylvester McCoy. Because you lot would probably be, you know, late teens, weren't you?
Not at the time, no. I like him now.
But yeah, I mean, Craig is on Proctor. He says, I just stopped watching it. Hated it. And then we did a big Sylvester McCoy thing when we did interviewed Andrew Cartmell, and he went back and rewatched it all, and he said, I take it all back. It's the best, one of the best docs we've ever seen. And that's with a grown eyes and hindsight. Yeah. But at the time, you know, the late teeners did not like it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, because just before that era, I think, you know, it would be my third worst thing that he did, and that was, well, it's kind of connected with his relationship with Eric Saywood, I think, but him and Saywood together came out with the Trial of a Time Lord idea, which couldn't have been
worse.
It couldn't have been a more wrong-headed decision to make one long story in that way when you're trying to attract new viewers. We were talking earlier on about first nights and stuff. You've got one first night in the whole year, and that, technically speaking. I mean, the stories are kind of split up a little bit, but they weren't portrayed in that way in things like the Radio Times, as far as I remember. So, I mean, that's a terrible, terrible decision. And all the way through his relationship with Eric Saywood was that, you know, he would say that, you know, oh, that doesn't work for me, for ideas Eric Saywood come up. I mean, he'd never give a proper idea of why it didn't work for him, and that's because he's poking his nose in the creative process, which he really shouldn't be.
And that's what he didn't do with Andrew Cartmell. I think that's the thing as well, is that Edward Woodward, whoever he is, Eric Saywood, he'd given up, hadn't he? Like, he could not be arsed with it. And that blatantly reeked throughout the Trial of the Time Lord. I think it reeked throughout the Trial of the Time Lord for everything. You have the big, magnificent, really expensive shot at the beginning, which is amazing.
Yeah, still amazing.
And still like the TARDIS going to the ship and all that kind of stuff. And then it just goes to shit. And it is shit. And I've never choose to watch it. But again, going back when I was a kid, loved it. Weird, isn't it?
Well, I mean, that's the target market. So in a way, it was working, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm going to put one last thing out there. Now, this could be controversial. Ooh, not like me. Ian Levine.
You're blaming JNT for Ian Levine. It's his father. You heard it here first.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I suppose he did bring some quite good stuff. Like, he obviously was good at continuity, wasn't he?
Mm.
And he was good at bringing back the continuity, the classic monsters, stuff like that. But I don't know. I just don't like him. There's something about him that just pisses me off. I don't know what it is. I want to punch him in his face a little bit.
You got roasting on our last episode. So.
Did he?
Yeah, this is.
I feel a bit bad. Is he a nice guy? Is he all right, Jim? Convince me that Ian Levine's all right.
Well, I mean, it's not for us to say, but I mean, if you see his reactions to various things and see him interviewed, I would say probably not. I have one kind of direct dealing with him. I said something about Doctor Who at the time on Twitter, and he just replied with bollocks. That's the only contact I've ever had with a man, and I think I'm going to judge him by that. And everything else I've heard about. But, you know, thanks to him for the episodes that he recovered.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, thanks for that.
But, you know, that's it, I think. I don't think he's a particularly pleasant person. But, yeah. Let's not get libelled. Okay, Bob, do you think that's us for this episode then?
Most definitely, on that bombshell.
Yes. Before we get taken off the air, we'll take ourselves off the air. So, yeah, thanks to everyone for those questions and for all the other questions that have gone into the dominatrix thingy.
Dominatrix! I can't remember what it's called anymore.
Randominator.
Randominator.
Yes, to be plucked out
dominatrix.
A little later date. Stop poking things into that dominatrix, Bob.
That's a latex day. What?
So thanks everyone for those. And keep them coming, please, to random.fandom@mail.com. And as we've been doing, next month when we come around to recording this again, I'll whack something on Twitter. And you can contact us with your questions that way as well. So thanks very much and keep it up.
I've been Bob Fleming from the Proctor Who podcast. Goodbye from me.
And I've been Jim Cameron from the Crinod podcast. And it's also goodbye from me. Speak to you again next month.